Bill, tell us a little bit about this deal from the point of view of both teams, certainly from the point of view of the Panthers.
For the Panthers, just looking for something on that fourth line, if Marchment can come in with a little bit of size. We had two defensemen. We had Matheson and Pesek playing on that fourth line. And Mulligan's on a one-way contract, so it frees up a little bit of a cap space if the Panthers are right up against the salary cap. So if they do decide to try and make some moves at the deadline, any kind of cap relief that they can get would be helpful. So we'll see if Marchment gets a chance to come in, maybe make an impact on that fourth line. But for the Panthers, Dennis Mulligan just wasn't fitting into the situation. The top six was full and didn't really fill into that bottom six role. So they make the move, get a big guy in Marchment, a big body, and that's what they're looking for, is just a little bit more toughness and grit on that bottom six pairing.
Bill, in reading a little bit about Dennis Mulligan, it did seem that he was in a much better position with the organization, at least early in the year, and then maybe fell out of favor with the coaching staff. What sort of perspective can you shed on that?
He got put into a top six role right out of training camp, had a really good training camp, was able to produce some numbers in the first 15, 20 games, then went into a dry spell. And when he went into the dry spell under Quenneville, when you're not producing offense, you got to be able to do a little bit of something. And his defensive side of the game really started to struggle, and the impact that he was having, he was trying to cheat on the offensive side of the puck and just wasn't producing it. I believe he went somewhere with 20 games without a point and just couldn't get back into the rotation. And then once that happened, it became clear that once slotted into a bottom six position, he couldn't provide the energy as far as hitting and driving the energy with that type of stuff. So Mulligan was a player that Q lost faith in. He had a chance, but it just, once it dwindled and showed that he wasn't going to be responsible on both sides, that they felt that they had to get rid of him.
Now, Bill, the Panthers are 3-6-1 in their last 10. And, you know, boy, I can remember the folks around here 2 weeks ago, maybe a little more than 2 weeks ago, everybody was talking about the Panthers. And, you know, you'd get up in the morning and you'd look what the Leafs did and you'd look at what the Panthers did. What's gone wrong in those past 10 games? And has that changed from your point of view? What, the Panthers are 2 points behind the Leafs. They have two games in hand. But from your point of view, does it change what the Panthers may do at the trade deadline?
It's changed a little bit. You had that seven-game winning streak before the All-Star game and before the bye week, and it looked like everything was going according to plan. And then you come out, and all of a sudden, they come out with a team that doesn't look to be playing its best. Its top players aren't producing. It doesn't seem to be engaged mentally. We've had some games, some really bad first periods against a lot of teams coming out of that All-Star break. So there's some players that would be available. The contracts for on Huberdeau and Barkov, even Trocheck, are pretty good team-friendly contracts. But Mike Matheson in the second year of an eight-year deal that pays him $5 million, if they could probably unload that. I'm not sure if it's possible, but that's one contract that probably they're fielding calls on. And maybe if you can get rid of something like that, then you have some flexibility as far as at the trade deadline. But this Panther team is built a lot in similarities to that Maple Leaf team when you watch them play. And when I watch this Panther team play, when they play with a mental edge and a mental toughness and with a little sandpaper, then it's there. But when they go through the motions and just try and run and gun and go up and think it's going to be an easy night at this time of year, it just does not work. You see these top teams with Boston, with Washington, now they get Dylan. These teams are mean. There's a fear of losing, and when they play the opposition, these top teams, you see anger and venom. And to me, when I see the Panthers, it's niceties. I see that from the Maple Leafs at times too. You have to play this game not with hatred of your opponent, but dislike. There has to be a strong dislike with this year. When you get in a playoff series, a seven-game playoff series, you have to have dislike running through almost everybody on the opposition. And that's how you win Stanley Cups. And so when you watch, to me, the Panthers and the Maple Leafs in that kind of scenario, they have to be able to show that they can go out there and that they have that anger to go out and that fear of losing. You have to really hate losing. And that's what gets you in the playoffs, and that's what gets you into contention, and that's what's been lacking from the Panther side.
Bill, that's a really interesting observation. In our part of the world, the Brian Burke would call that truculence, basically. You need truculence to head forward in the playoffs. As Jeff said, there is so much focus in this market on the Panthers and what they're doing, how many games in hand. I realize Florida is a very different place from Toronto in many different ways. But do you feel the Panther fan base, is it the same thing there? Are they keeping an eye on what sort of the Maple Leafs are doing on a game-by-game basis?
Yes, they're keeping trying. I was just talking to my wife this morning, and just going through, if you do have social media and Twitter, and just if you're a player, probably stay off it. But I said, we have the same reaction, just to a smaller scale, to what you see from the Toronto Maple Leafs when you see what their fans are reacting. So you can basically compare. Our diehard hockey fans are having the same reaction that your fans are having in Toronto. They're almost identical. They just parallel each other. There's just more of them in Toronto. So it's they're having there's a sense of frustration with this Panther team, and there's been a long stretch of losing, and this was a team with a lot of high expectations, and they want to see it come to fruition. So when I watch this team and I watch it with the talent, this is what it's built for, and they want to get into the playoffs. So I could see the frustration and the similarities on both sides.
How's Joel Quenneville handled this? I mean, look, he's a veteran coach. He's got an impressive track record. But I've got to think for him in some ways. I understand the last few years in Chicago weren't entirely smooth for him, but this has got to be frustrating as well, because I'm sure we see the same thing you see and the same thing he sees. When this team is on, we saw them in Toronto. When this team is on, I said to me they were one of the few teams I've seen that are faster than the Leafs.
Yes, they can skate, and it has been frustrating for Quenneville, and I had the ability just to ask him basically, I said, you had to get back to coaching a little bit this year, I guess, compared to Chicago. Mm. And he told me, yes, that Chicago team was a well-oiled machine after a while. And he said there was some tweaks that had to be made to it. But he said when I was around that group, he could not emphasize how competitive that Chicago group was. And when you see Taves and Keith fight in practice, drop their gloves, pick up their sticks, and then continue on the way, it shows you that that's a competitive level that's been just groomed there year after year. Chicago, with the salary cap and problems, has fallen. But you can't deny 3 Stanley Cups and what Quenneville was able to do there. So he's seen and knows what it takes to get to the mountaintop. And when he sees players, he came out the other day and said our players just simply aren't working hard enough. And when you have that kind of statement from your coach and he knows what it takes, it's just really set you back on your heels. Because at this time of year, to me, this is what you trained all offseason for. This is what you play for, because there's the regular season, then there's the real season, and that's the playoffs. And to me, the one regret I have walking away from the game is not winning a Stanley Cup, because you dream of it as a kid. Once you get in the NHL, you dream of that. But once you're established, you have one dream. And when you don't have a Stanley Cup on your resume at the end of your career, it hurts to watch the celebration. So that's where, if you look at a Toronto team or a Panther team and you say they're not working hard enough and they're not competing hard enough, it's hard for me to really fathom that, because you only get so many kicks at the can and so many tries to get that Stanley Cup. This is when it should just be full throttle, everything you got. So that's where the frustration for Quenneville lies.
Bill, organizationally, where do the Panthers stand on Mike Hoffman, who is a pending free agent at the end of the year?
Got to make a decision. They're going to have to, because Dadonov's up and Hoffman's up, and you don't have the availability in the cap room to sign both of them. So that's a trade line decision. Where are you at? How much faith do you have in your hockey team? He's played some good hockey. I got to give him that. And the goal-scoring ability would be missed. So what do you get back for him? And I guess you have to open up the phone calls and listen to offers. I wouldn't say it's a guarantee that he has to leave, but they're going to listen to Mike Hoffman, and if it makes sense in a return that would keep them in a position and in the playoff hunt and believe that they could sacrifice the goals, then there's definitely a chance that they make that deal, because it's tough to lose a guy in the summer for nothing to unrestricted free agency. And that's the guy that looks like they're not going to be able to resign. So the phone calls are probably open on Mike Hoffman, but that would be a tough one to let go.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sitting there thinking of the Panthers as well. You know, you don't want you've got to be careful if you're Dale Talon. You don't want to shut the window on this thing completely, because there's still some good talent there. Like, I hear them, you know, that talk about possibility Trocheck being traded. I mean, to me, he's a guy you hang on to.
Yeah, well, if you look to those contracts, Trocheck with a couple of years left at 4.6 or 4.7 million. Even he was a 30-goal scorer a couple of years back, but even he's going to get 50, 55 points this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still worth $4.7 million in today's market, pretty
sure
much,
is.
For a guy that competes. So those contracts are really team-friendly, and those are just guys that you can hope can turn it around. And if a guy has scored 30 goals in this league, you believe that it's still in there. Trocheck, again, the return has to be so good, because those are – it's 5.9 and 5.9 for both Barkov and Huberto, and then 4.7 for Trocheck. When you have those kind of deals on the books for a couple more years, it's tough to let that kind of player go at that kind of money, because it just doesn't really hinder your salary cap. It frees you up. The Panthers are up against the cap, but what do you bring in and what kind of price do you get back? Because those are real team-friendly deals for players that can produce a lot.
Bill, in this city, Freddie Anderson is obviously sort of front and center on everyone's mind. I mean, particularly after last night, where he did not play well. But, you know, goaltending in a city like Toronto is always a major, major conversation piece. You guys got a big one that came in this year with a big reputation from Columbus. Where does the organization sort of stand right now on what Sergei Bobrovsky has done this year?
The start was okay, even though the numbers weren't good. And then there was a dry spell, and now there's been a stretch of or a handful of games that he's been out of position, kind of over playing, and just they would need to get back to basics. And to me, it's same thing. Toronto, too, the defense, the group in front of them, the team defense. If you limit the shots, and he's good, it's when you get the second and third opportunities that it starts to cause problems for Bobrovsky. And this Panther team just has to be better and more well committed defensively, and Bobrovsky will get the numbers back to where he's at. He's at a point in his career, even though he's had this bad stretch, maybe three quarters of a year where it doesn't go where he's like, as he had liked. But if you're a goaltender of that caliber and you have two Vezina trophies, you should be able to shake this kind of stuff off. And if this Panther team does get better, you should be able to put everything behind you mentally and play your best hockey down the stretch. And that's what they're hoping for here. I'm sure the same thing with Frederick Anderson in Toronto. But part of it is on Bobrovsky, and part of it is on the group in front of him as whole, as a defensive scheme and the defensive group in front of him. Because the Panther defensemen have been guilty of a lot of turnovers and giveaways that have led to a lot of point-blank scoring chances. And when you get those scoring chances that you're not used to seeing and they end up, it can hurt a goalie's confidence. So it just goes both ways, goes hand-in-hand for the defensive group and the goaltending.